Timidandasya Gyananjana Chanakaya Chakshuru Militam Jena Asmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Tadatvishvapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jutapadakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathamitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Halita Sri Vishakamitam Cha Hey Krishna Karna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Kopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vansha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patithanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasudhi Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Today, we welcome you to Sri Radha Gopinath Temple. By Srila Prabhupada's infinite kindness, he is always blessing the universe with the mercy of Sri Krishna. And those who open their hearts to receive his mercy become supremely fortunate. Today, this mercy has taken the shape of these effulgent, assembled Vaishnavas. Four of Srila Prabhupada's very intimate disciples and associates who have engaged in serving his mission for the major portion of their lives. First we have my dear senior godbrother, His Holiness Sripad Sridhar Swami Maharaj. He was on the original book distribution party of ISKCON back in the late 60s. Traveled in America and was one of the original pioneers that came here to India. Was personally instructed and encouraged by Srila Prabhupada in his preaching here. He is one of the very stalwart Vaishnavas of our society. He is very much part of the great efforts that have developed Sri Sri Radha Ras Bihari Mandir in Juhu. and he is known and loved by devotees all over the world. I remember when I was a little brahmachari, now I'm a little sannyasi, but when I was little brahmachari, living way up on a hill, somewhere in the mountains of America, His Holiness Sridhar Maharaj came, and he gave classes, and he led kirtans that have caused my heart, my senses, my entire being was shaking and trembling. I haven't recovered since.
Me neither.
But today, all of your hearts will also tremble at being exposed to his incredible dedication and sacrifice to the service of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. Let us very enthusiastically welcome back our dear well-wisher and guide His Holiness Sripad Sridhar Swami Maharaj. One time I was in San Francisco and I was scheduled to give class, Srimad Bhagavatam class. And I was just about to give class and the temple president came to me and said, Sridhar Swami just came. He said, he should give class because his classes are funnier than yours. So I happily surrendered. His Holiness Sripad Prahlad Ananda Swami Maharaj came to this movement in the 1960s, New York, and he's been in the renounced order for about 35 years now. He was serving Srila Prabhupada, one of the greatest book distributors in our history, as far as steadiness and dedication. He was temple president in various places, and now travels throughout the world, inspiring, enlivening people's hearts with his Hari Katha and Hari Kirtan, and his wonderful Vaishnav characteristics. He is minister of sannyasis, and also minister of health for our society. He's also a very, very learned scholar. He knows so many slokas. For those of you who were at our Pune Yatra the year he came, in one class he recited about 175 slokas. Devotees counted. Yeah, they kept count. He has memorized Krishna book and memorized, but most important, when he repeats, it's done with such devotion and such sincerity. Let us welcome His Holiness Srila Prahladananda Swami Maharaj. Of course, I can speak for a long, long time. But you hear me too much, so better I speak briefly. His Holiness Sripad Romapad Swami Maharaj also came to our society very early in history. In Buffalo, New York? Yes? Yes. Right behind Prahladananda Maharaj. Srila Romapad Swami Maharaj, over these years, he's been always steady and faithful in the renounced order for over 30 years. And he was very much not only in distributing books, but he was a Sankirtan leader in New York City. organizing and enthusing Prabhupada's book distribution. And he gives very learned, wonderful classes. He has been steady and faithful, like a rock from Govardhan Hill over the years. And wherever he goes, people are very much attracted, their hearts melt. He's really a person who is genuinely sold his life to the mission of Srila Prabhupada and to the service of the Vaishnavas. He is a member of the GBC for many years, and he's just such a great soul. Let us welcome him to Sri Radha Gopinath Temple. And we have His Grace Yadubar Prabhu. Yesterday during lunch prasad we were reading from Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, and a majority of the reading was about Yadubar Prabhu. He was a professional filmmaker, and he came to India to make films, and he met Srila Prabhupada. He and his good wife Vishakha Mataji, who was also into photography, they traveled with Prabhupada throughout India and in many parts of the world. He was right there taking photos, taking film footage, and he was one of the few people in the world who was given the encouragement as well as the opportunity to practically be with Srila Prabhupada throughout the day on many occasions. Received so many personal instructions from Prabhupada. And the greatest historical films of our societies have been made by him. He did a documentary on Vrindavan, on New Vrindavan. There needs to be an update on that. And perhaps his most well-loved film is Your Ever-Well-Wisher, a documentary of Srila Prabhupada's life. And only a devotee who dearly loves Srila Prabhupada could make such a film. Because in that film, I believe everyone who sees it weeps in affection for Srila Prabhupada. His preaching is very unique, very profound. And we're so happy that he is here. Let us welcome Yadubar Prabhu. So, three sannyasi, God brothers, about half hour each, you'd like to speak?
We have to speak half an hour?
As you'd like.
Well, actually, when I came here on the 8th of Feb, so many people have been telling me that all the devotees are very anxious that I should come here so they can see me. So I thought today I would just sit here and you can all see me.
But Vaishnavas see through their ears.
You're going to have your strongest glasses then. Actually, I was just thinking, hearing that Rompad Swami and Praladananda Swami were from Buffalo. There are certain places in America where many, many devotees came from. and Buffalo was one of them. And I was thinking maybe one of the reasons was because it's the only place in America where the people drink buffalo milk. But I foresee the day when, this is getting crowded up here, you're going to have a podium going all the way down to the end of the temple. And you'll have all the leader. Actually, I've found some people, Rompad Swami is going to speak on compassion and mercy, but I feel compassion for him. He's never been here. Guru Prasada Swami. So next time you have to catch him, bring him to the lotus feet of Radha Gopinath. And now Ashtasakhi. It's getting crowded over there too. Well, I guess in my travels I have been seeing and reading. Well, I've been reading a little bit from Mahabharata, which I've read many times and I like very much. It's said that Mahabharata is for Stri, Sudra, and Dvija Bandhu. So I'm definitely not Stri, and I'm not Dvija Bandhu. So I guess I'm a Sudra, but being a Sudra in Prabhupada's movement is quite all right, under the shelter of so many nice devotees. But I've been seeing throughout the world that devotees need strong spiritual guidance, constant guidance, not just fly by night or occasional guidance. In other words, we have preachers that fly in and stay for 3 hours and give a class, take prasadam and fly out. But devotees are really trying very hard to follow Daivi Varnashram. In other words, even if you're a Sudra or a Kshatriya, you still have to follow the four regulative principles. Because if one is breaking those regulative principles, he's not qualified to enter into the kingdom of God. And someone may think, well, in our Hindu Dharma, we believe in a next life. So next life I'll do. But it doesn't work that way. If you're finding a little discomfort in this lifetime, and for sure you will get a next one, but it's not like, I'm glad I'm in this life, it's sure easy now, everything's okay, I can follow all the principles. No, you have to make choices in your life. You have to decide that I am finished. I don't want Janma, Aishwarya, Shruta, Sribir. I don't want material benefit. I want Akinchana Gochara. I want Krishna. I want a world without pain. I want a world where there is real love, true love, giving only, amanina manadena, where everyone is full of respect without expecting return. I want to live free from the fear of death. I want to get out of the iron age of Kali Yuga, where everything is so imperfect. I want to live in a world of devotees. So if you make that decision, it's like people say, why are there so many no's? No this, no that, no this, no. Seems like your religion is just too difficult for anyone to follow. But the real truth is, if you meditate on yourself in the spiritual world, and you can get a glimpse of this by reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, by reading Chaitanya Bhagavat, by reading Srimad Bhagavatam, and especially Lord Krishna's direct pastimes, you'll get an idea of what we are missing out on by allowing ourselves to be trapped here in this miserable material world. You'll get an idea of what you can look forward to if you just make the right choices. And once your desire is strong enough, who's to blame in our lives? Are we victims? Has someone forced us to stay here in this material world? Has someone arranged for our bad karma? Are there some nasty demons who are causing us problems? No, we're not victims. That's the worst consciousness. At every moment, you have it within your power to follow the regulative principles, to engage in devotional service, to chant the holy names of the Lord. This is called sadhana bhakti. And of vaidhi bhakti, there are two stages, and you have to become relatively perfect, at least 70-80%, if not 100%. Perfect in sadhana. So you have to, this is something practical that you can aim for, something you can work on day in, day out, something that you can measure success. It's very practical, but you have to do it. You have to try to get this desire. And when your desire is there, that I want Krishna, I don't want this material world. It's miserable. It's terrible. So much suffering. So many people in misery, and they don't even know why. At least I have some idea why. At least I have a theoretical hope. But they don't have anything. They go through suffering, and they're hopeless. They're despondent. So once you commit yourself, you have to take this step. You have to cross over the line. Now, I want Krishna bhakti. When that desire is strong enough, when the yes, 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 Krishna bhakti, then the no's are very insignificant, the little things. When your desire, yes, and you have to keep working at it. So I remember a story which underlines my own, and I have seen over the past few years many devotees struggle with adversity, because there will be adversity. Don't think it is going to be an air-conditioned, easy ride. Don't think you'll have three servants and, you know, everything will be provided for you. It's not like that. Ultimately, you're on your own. You have the association of Vaishnavas. That will give you a good chance. You have your spiritual master. He'll try his best to help you. By the grace of Guru, one can get Krishna. If one has a yes, a strong yes, then Guru can help you. He won't force you. He may try to force you, but that's good. But if you don't want to drink the water, lead a horse to the water, but the horse doesn't want to drink. So everything is there within our grasp, and sometimes there will be adversity, and that's when it helps to have a strong mind. Udaredatmanatmanam. You have to raise yourself by your controlled mind in the fire of the controlled mind. That's what sadhana helps you to do. It helps you to fix your mind on the right things. People do have a fixed mind on all the vishaya. They are vishayis, and they have their minds on all the temporary things in the material world that bring suffering. Yehi sansparsaja bhoga dukha yonaya. The source of their suffering, they're endeavoring to get more of. That's ludicrous. That's insanity. At least we know better. We know better. And we can do better. So, who suffered more than Kunti Devi and her sons, and especially of all her sons, Yudhisthira. Poor Yudhisthira, he was so good. He was a Kshatriya, but sometimes it was really hard to discriminate, to distinguish him from a Brahmana. Religious Principles was his middle name, Dharmaraj. His first name, actually. He was so wonderful. And when they were in the forest, he had gambled away everything. He didn't want to, but he was caught in a trap. And that's what happens to us sometimes, too. We have good intentions, but the road to hell, now they're paving all the roads here in Bombay, and everybody's very happy. Now I can drive my new Qualis, or my new car, my new Toyota, or my new, I don't know, Ford, my Astra, my this, on these nice new paved roads. Well, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. You have to go beyond good intentions. Yujasva vigata jura. You have to fight. You really have to be determined to fight against your lower nature, your animal nature. You have to stand up and declare yourself somehow or other. You have to win the victory to win the match. If we just had as much conviction, enthusiasm, desire to win the match as the billion people in India have to win the World Cup cricket match. Sometimes they go just crazy. It means their whole life to them. Prabhupada was in Los Angeles driving on a morning walk, but he was driving to Cheviot Hills Park, and they passed by a big golf course. So Prabhupada had little knowledge of golf. He didn't really know that much about it. I don't think you have, at that time you didn't have golf in India. So he asked Keshava, what is that? Or maybe it was Karander brothers. And he says, golf. And Prabhupada said, what is that? He said, well, they hit a little ball around a field into a hole. Prabhupada said, just see. expert at wasting time. So in India, you don't do that. You hit a little ball all over the field and break some wickets and whatever. But we have to get out of these games, you know. Really have to focus. So Yudhisthira, he was in distress because all of his brothers and his wife, Draupadi, secretly, or maybe not so secretly, she had five husbands, but she really loved one of them, Nakula. No, it was Arjuna. She was in love with Arjuna. And Arjuna had been sent away to gain weapons from Lord Shiva, and then he was called back to his father's house. He was living there for many years, learning many things, which helped him later on. Indra, Loka. So at one point it became too heavy for Yudhisthira, and a sage Brihadasva came there. And Yudhisthira would usually ask, tell us about religious principles, tell us about this, that. On this occasion, he was so depressed, he said, do you know of anyone, either now or in the past, who has suffered as much as I am suffering? I feel so depressed. And thank God for traveling sages. Brihadasva had a story. And he told the story of King Nala, king of the Nishadas, and Damayanti, princess of the Panchalas. Her father's name was Bhima. He was a king also, great king. And Nala was a great king, a powerful king, a religious king, famous in all the three worlds. So many things conspired together, although they never met, but they fell in love. And finally, Damayanti was in such distress to marry this man that she had never heard anything, seen. She'd heard so much about from everyone, including the swans. The swans used to fly in and give them messages about Nala and to Nala about Damayanti. So she became completely sick. She started gasping, alas, oh my. And her father didn't know what happened. Then he realized it's time for her marriage. If, by the way, if you see your daughter going, alas, you know, it's time for their marriage. She was in love with Nala. So they arranged for her Swayamvara, and she was so qualified, chaste and beautiful, talented, that even all the demigods heard about her Swayamvara, including Yama and Indra and I forget who else was involved, but there were four or five of them. And they all came for her Swayamvara, hoping to win her because they couldn't all five have her, so one of them, obviously they were the senior, superior, powerful person, one of them should have won the hand of Damayanti. On the way they met Nala, they were flying in their airplane and he was on his chariot, so they saw him, how beautiful, and they engaged him to go and tell Damayanti that they've come and she should choose one of them. Well, Nala was devastated because he was going there for that purpose also, and he said, you know, can't you find another messenger, please? They said, nope. So then Damayanti contrived that she would come in the Swayamvara, but she would see Nala, King Nala, and she would choose him. So then she comes to her Swayamvara, and the demigods all took the shape of Nala, and she couldn't tell which one was Nala. So then she just surrendered, and she went to them and said, you know, my heart is already given to King Nala, and you're very great, and I would obviously choose any of you, but my heart's already given. I'm devoted to him in my mind and heart. So they were impressed, and they revealed Nala, and they were married, and they were living happily, not ever after. Because on the way back to the heavenly planets, they came across the personality of Kali. Now, if you know anything about the personality of Kali, he is, I always remember one life member, what was it, Dada Singh? Yeah, Dada Singh. He got into movies and he always played the demon, you know, he was always the personality of Kali, he's always the demon. And he, along with the personality of Dwapar, they were going in that direction, and demigod said, where are you going? He said, we're going to the Swayamvar of Damayanti. And the demigods laughed and said, it's over, sorry, she already chose Nala. So Kali freaked out, and then he conspired with Dwapar to create a situation where Nala would lose everything. And in fact, Dwapar went to Nala's brother, who was envious of Nala anyway. He organized what? A gambling match, of course. And Nala came there, and he lost everything, but he really lost everything. In fact, all he was left with was one piece of cloth. Not two, one for his wife and one for him, just one for the both of them. So they had to go around with one piece of cloth. And that wasn't bad enough, but they left their capital and they walked and walked and they became tired. No one would help them. They were afraid of the brother. And the personality of Kali was still inside Nala. He had overtaken his mind. And I mean, the story goes on, but it was so bad. But finally, as all dramas from the, well, not all of them, but anyway, it had a happy ending, you'll be happy to know. And that's why Brihadvashra told that story to Yudhisthira, that Nala suffered much more than you and he was ultimately victorious, and you will also be victorious. So I've seen devotees that become fixed, and there are many, and the interesting thing is, sorry about this, boys, but most of the stories have been involving great women. There's a saying that behind every great man, there's a great woman. But in Kali, it gets reversed. Behind every great woman, there's a great man, it appears. Many of our senior lady preachers have been in distress up to the point of losing their lives, bodies, and they have been so devotional, courageous, fearless. If you want to read a good book, a really nice story, it's called Fearless, Simple for the Simple. I don't know if you have that here, but it's a beautiful book. It's about one of our god sisters who left with a brain tumor, and a miraculous book. I mean, mystical things happened to her. And she was just an ordinary woman. She was not a big book distributor. She was the wife of the Scottish temple president. That's not Scotch. Scotch is a drink. Scottish is from Scotland. And but her ending was just, it was worth writing a book about and reciting her story again and again. But I've just seen that devotees who take shelter of the Vaishnavas and fearlessly face all adversity, yatra yogeshwara krishno yatra partho danurdaraha tatra shir vijayo bhutir dhruvanitir matir mama. There's victory. There's always significant victory. So we need to focus on big victories and small victories. The small victories, when you consider them, you will come to realize that there's nothing small, because small victories lead to big victories. Small victories give you internal strength so that you can affect people around you, and it grows and grows like a dynamic circle of influence. So, no intoxication, even tea and coffee. No illicit sex. Now, this is a tough one. And in the West, I remember going around and hearing from Indian congregations that, you know, Swamiji, we're from India, we don't need to hear these things, we want to hear about Krishna Lila. And I always had to think, you know, only a century or two ago, India was 300 million population. Now they're a billion. What happened? A lot of storks flew over and dropped babies, or so. We do need to control our senses, and that's a very big one, because it just absorbs all your energy and your intelligence. And who loses? Everybody loses. Because you are robbed of your determination to focus your mind on Krishna and transcendental sound. And then you also lose, because you don't have a guide, a swami, someone who can help you and teach you and protect you. So it takes two people to be fixed in the regulative principles. Of course, no meat eating when you have, you know, Gujarati Khana, or when you have Mother Palika, or, you know, who would ever think of meat eating? Prasadam here is just so good. And believe me, I've seen so many devotees come to India. Well, in the beginning, many devotees came to India healthy and went home sick, but that was before Prabhupada started life membership. and eating in people's homes. Then I saw many skinny devotees come to India and leave healthy. It's the polite way of saying fat in India. It's, oh, your health is improved. So those aren't a problem. And gambling, there's nothing here to gamble for, you know. Cricket, maybe, but just throw out the television. But that illicit sex one, that's one we really have to work on, because even there are eight kinds of illicit sex. It's not just the genital sex, but meditating. I find that India is one of the biggest places in the world for people who access pornographic sites. That's illicit sex. And your mind gets polluted, and thinking, feeling, willing. So these are some of the adversities that we have to overcome. And if we determine, we will be successful. Believe me, I know it. Of course, I'm still struggling. But I've made a lot of progress, and I'm confident that I've learned a lot, and that's the most important thing, to learn how to be a servant of the servant of the servant of the Vaishnavas. Hare Krishna.
Om Agnadvarandasya Agnanjana Salakaya Chaksur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. I didn't have any set topic, but I'll just recite a little bit from the Bhagavad Gita. So in the seventh chapter, this is Prabhupada's, one of his favorite verse. It's a verse that he lectured on more than any other verse in the Bhagavad Gita. This is 7.1, where Krishna says, Maya shakta mayak partha yogam yunjan manashaya asamshayam samagramam ita gyasasi tatschinu. Now hear from me, O son of Pritha, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. So Prabhupada writes in the purport, and the first six, I'll just recite a little of the purport. In the first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, the living entity has been described as non-material, spirit soul, who is capable of elevating himself to self-realization through the different types of yoga. At the end of the sixth chapter, it is clearly explained that the steady concentration of the mind upon Krishna, or in other words, Krishna consciousness, is the highest form of all yoga. By practicing Krishna consciousness, one could automatically know about the other types of yogas. Impersonal Brahman realization, Paramatman realization, are not full knowledge of Krishna, but a partial. Full knowledge of Krishna is Krishna consciousness, and everything is revealed to the person in Krishna consciousness. And then Prabhupada, he for me, that one can understand Krishna just through the process of hearing. Sometimes we think to hear from persons who are scholarly, then we can understand something called knowledge. But actually, to understand Krishna means to understand who, or to hear from those who have actually understood Krishna. And one understands Krishna the more, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Techam satatam yuktanam bhajantam pritipurvakam dadami buddha yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. That the qualification to understand Krishna, to actually absorb the mind in Krishna, the actual qualification is how much and how enthusiastically we're engaged in Krishna's service. And the inspiration from that, Krishna has said in the previous verse, much chitta, much kata prana, bodhyantash parashpram, katayantash ramam nityam, tushanti cha, ramanti cha. So this bodhyantak parashpram, hearing from persons who actually have understood how wonderful Krishna is. Mechanically trying to think about Krishna is not possible. But when the mind becomes attracted to Krishna, by finding out how sweet Krishna is, how wonderful Krishna is, how wonderful his devotees are, how affectionate they are, not only to the great exalted devotees, but to every living entity. That Krishna is so kind, he's so compassionate, he's so loving, he's so affectionate. And equally, if not more so, such personalities as his Srimati Radharani and their followers. So when we realize that that same loving intensity, that same affection, is not only just for some exalted devotees, but it's for each one of us personally. When we understand how Krishna is so kind to us personally, then naturally we'll want to think about him, we'll want to associate with him, and by such association, by such thinking, will become inspired to take to the process which is known as service, enthusiastic service, by which that relationship develops more and more. So Krishna has advised, tatstrinu, hear from me, or hear from Krishna's devotees. That by such practice, then gradually we'll actually remember Krishna. And remembrance of Krishna, of course, means to associate with Krishna. But even better than associating with Krishna directly, as Krishna has said, himself in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, naham vipara na chinarapitira, naham vapi na sudra, gopi bharata pada kamalayor, dasa dasa anudasa. So we may not know Krishna, and being in the material world means a place where we don't have so much access to Krishna. But if we have access to Krishna's devotees, and we have an access to a devotee such as Srila Prabhupada, who understood what is the actual desire of Krishna. Not very complicated. One time, I wrote to Srila Prabhupada, I think I've told the story previously in a different place, I think at the Punya Yatra, because I was, this is in 1960, beginning of 1969, I thought I was on the Bhava Bhakti platform. So I was curious because at that time there were not many books available. There was the only book we had available at that time was the original three volumes of Srila Prabhupada's Srimad Bhagavatam. So I had read those and I was always interested in reading something else. So Rupa Nuga said, I have a book that no one's supposed to read. So I said, wow, that's the book that I'm looking for. So he said, well, Prabhupada said, I can read the purports, but I can't read the verses. I shouldn't read the verses. So I said, wow, it must be something significant. So I used to stay up at night, and where I knew where the book was, so I'd stay up and read the book. So I couldn't quite understand how Bhava would turn into Prema. At that time I was a treasurer and I was a Sankirtan leader also. And whatever money we collected for the first book that Prabhupada published in America, this little blue Bhagavad Gita, I'd send him the money for it. So one time I sent him some money for whatever we collected, and I asked Srila Prabhupada, how does Bhava turn into Prema? So Prabhupada, knowing my heart, he wrote me back a full-page letter explaining about Harinam Sankirtan and the distribution of Bhagavad Gita's in Buffalo. And then he wrote in the next paragraph, he said, just like in San Francisco, we've just had a Rath Yatra and 10,000 boys and girls were dancing and chanting in full spiritual ecstasy. That the boys and girls in your country, they're generally good souls. That's why they've taken birth in such a nice country. So if they simply engage whatever they have in Krishna's service, that will make their lives perfect. That in New York, I've heard that in just 2 weeks, they've distributed 3,000 copies of Back to Godhead. And then in Buffalo, that you're also distributing Back to Godhead very nicely. So please continue in this way, and your success, that as Krishna sees that you're working seriously to help bring his other children back to the spiritual kingdom, then he'll bestow all blessings upon you. That Krishna is never ungrateful for our efforts to serve him, rest assured. Then Prabhupada wrote, P.S. As far as your question how Bhava Bhakti turns into Prema, there's no need to trouble yourself over such advanced topics at the present time. So I realized maybe I'm not in Bhava, but... And then Prabhupada said that soon my book Nectar of Devotion will come out and you can read about it in there. And then at the end he said, you said that you sent me $50... but where is the $50? But besides, what impressed me, besides Prabhupada understanding my heart and also my level of advancement, or lack of it, that Prabhupada also, he made it very clear that Krishna consciousness, I remember one time Prabhupada was there. Before I joined the movement, I thought I was a mystic yogi. So Prabhupada came to Buffalo at the beginning of 1969, and I had the good fortune of sometimes sitting with Prabhupada for hours, and Prabhupada, just one devotee or another was there, or some guests would come, and Prabhupada was preaching. So I wasn't so attentive sometimes. So one time I was looking at Prabhupada, trying to see his aura, through my mystic power, which I thought I had. And Prabhupada just looked over to me and said, "Our process is bhakti, not mystic power." So I thought, well, okay. So our process is actually quite simple. That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has a mission, and the Panchatattva have a mission. That mission is to bring people back to Krishna. And their representatives, they also have a mission to bring people back to Krishna. And Prabhupada made it very clear that our mission is the same mission. It's somehow or another to work in the consciousness that everyone is actually Krishna's servant, and to do something to help them make some progress in devotional service. And if we're doing that, trying to do some service to the Vaishnavas, to our guru, who is in line with Prabhupada and his mission to bring people back to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's shelter of the Panchatattva, the six Goswamis, then through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the six Goswamis, the preaching mission, then we can actually fix our mind upon Krishna. That spirit, as His Holiness Ramapada Maharaj will talk about, of compassion, especially compassion for ourselves, that we're here in the material world, we're actually missing the loving relationship that we have with Krishna. And even more significant than that, pleasure means, happiness means, to experience the loving relationship that Krishna has and that the devotees have with each other. Pleasure, we talk about pleasure, we may talk about so many different things about, but real pleasure is just to experience the happiness of the residents of Vrindavan and their loving relationships with Krishna, and Krishna's happiness in his loving relationships with them. So our happiness will also be experienced, we can experience happiness by trying to become an instrument for the previous acharyas, connecting with them, connecting with the Panchatattva, and through them actually entering into the loving relationships between Radha and Krishna, not only what we consider the spiritual world, but the happiness that they feel when they see that the other living entities are also, their other children are coming back to the spiritual kingdom. Krishna is not only in the spiritual world experiencing happiness there, but his happiness here is to see how his other children are coming back to the spiritual kingdom. And when we experience that happiness of the residents of Vrindavan, the residents of Mayapur, when we experience their happiness of seeing progress in this world, of making people Krishna conscious, that's where we'll actually be able to understand what real happiness is. So that's compassion for ourselves, and through becoming compassionate for ourselves, connecting with the acharyas, and with the Panchatattva and Krishna and Vrindavan, we can actually understand what real compassion is for everyone else. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
This one or? Oh, here we go. Okay.
Oma Jnana Timarandasya Gananjana Sadakaya Chakshuran Viditam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitana Mano Bhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svapadantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I think I picked a good topic because the previous speakers have also addressed. I was inspired to speak on this topic, the topic of Vaishnava compassion, for a number of reasons. One of them being that in the reading that I've been doing lately in Prabhupada's books, particularly in Srimad Bhagavatam and other places also, it seems to be a theme. It's that great devotees of the Lord representing Krishna or Krishna himself becomes particularly pleased and attracted to those who come before him with very wonderful qualities. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is quoted to have said, we should act in such a way, not that we're trying to see Krishna, but in such a way that Krishna wants to see us. So what is there about us that Krishna wants to see? Certainly Krishna wants to see that we come before him ready to render humble and sincere service. But there are so many other qualities that devotees should have, and something that in the course of my travel as a sannyasi and hearing from the concerns of devotees, just like Sridhar Maharaj was describing a little bit, devotees want to see other devotees manifesting nice Vaishnava quality. And those qualities are it's something that should, when it's factually there, when the heart does become cleansed by chanting and service, those qualities naturally manifest. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavatya kinchana sarvayarganaish tatra samasate saraha. Conversely, when we see someone who's rendering devotional service, but some very basic qualities are absent. Something's missing. So in order to satisfy Krishna, when we come before Krishna with our prayers and our service, very genuine Vaishnava quality should be there. And Krishna decorates the devotee with those qualities. Something that we find in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada describes the process of deity worship as being like, he likens it to decorating one's face in a mirror. Only, so when you decorate your face, you don't decorate the face in the mirror, you decorate your face. We put on tilak, decorating our face, and we can see in the mirror the image of the tilak being put on our face. So Prabhupada likens deity worship to, by meditating on, just as I'll assume that Radhanath Maharaj is, along with the pujaris, have been meditating on the Ashtasakis. This is my first I've seen them. And what positions their hands would be in and what they will be holding and the service that they would be rendering and the glancing of their eyes upon the form of Radha Gopinath. The whole program of deity worship is an act of devotion of the pujari. And so many pujaris must be busy decorating the deities here. So as one decorates the deity, form of the Lord, one's own self becomes decorated, using this metaphor of decorating one's face. And we are that reflection, not the face. The deity is the object, and we're the worshipper of the deity. And by worshipping Krishna very, very devotionally, yas yasti bhaktir bhagavatya kinchana, Krishna decorates his devotee with nice qualities. So one of the most important qualities that we always expect to find within a devotee is compassion. I have several ideas I want to share, but one of them is that quality exists very naturally in every one of us because it's a quality that exists in Krishna. And there's a definition found in Nectar of Devotion, what that quality of compassion is as it exists within Krishna. And the quality in Nectar of Devotion, we could ask Prahlada Nanda Maharaj, because he's probably one of his many memorized sections of Prabhupada's books. But in Nectar Devotion, compassion is defined as being unable to bear the suffering and difficulty of another being. Compassion is defined in that way. And there are two examples of Krishna's compassion mentioned in Nectar Devotion. One of them is Krishna's compassion upon Grandfather Bhishma. Now we know that Grandfather Bhishma was a very, very great devotee, and how he completed his life and how Krishna reciprocated with him indicates that. He understood Krishna's position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he declared it boldly before the assembly of all the kings. Not just Krishna is the greatest person, Krishna is the Supreme Person. Bhishma Dev understood this. And yet Bhishma did certain things that might make one wonder, what is Bhishma's real position? Fighting against Krishna, piercing Krishna's body with arrows, taking a vow that he would kill Krishna's best friend, Arjuna. Either that, or he would force Krishna to break his promise to not fight in the battle. Bhishma Dev took a position that he didn't protect Draupadi when she was being disgraced before the Kauravas. Other things one can find in Bhishma's conduct that one might wonder, why would Krishna be so kind upon him? Because he's his devotee. But Bhishma was in such, he was a mystic yogi, for sure. He was a devotee, a pure devotee, but he exhibited the fact that he was a great yogi, lying on a bed of arrows. Remember once, Srila Prabhupada was visiting in Boston, and the devotees at that time didn't have a car to pick him up in, or even had, they didn't have any friends that had a car to pick him up in. So they rented a taxi, hired a taxi. And the taxi cab driver was driving the cab, and Prabhupada was in the back seat, and Satsarup Maharaj was sitting next to him. And the cab driver, being a typical American cabbie, was half looking at the road and half turning around looking at Prabhupada, saying, "So you're a Swami, huh? Does that mean you can lie on a bed of nails?" And Prabhupada said, "Better than that." "Oh, what's better than that?" Prabhupada said, "I can be in a room full of naked women and not be disturbed." That is the meaning of Swami. And the cab driver said, "Oh." So Bhishma was a yogi lying on a bed of arrows. And Krishna was unable to bear his suffering. And he knew the mind and heart of his devotee. And so he came before him, and tears were flooding the eyes of Grandfather Bhishma to know the affection that Krishna had for him. Because his one desire, receiving the benediction that Bhishma had, he could give up his body at will. So his one desire was that at the time of departing from his body, he would be able to see the form of Lord Krishna with his eyes wide open, drinking the beauty of Krishna through his eyes. The other example given of Krishna's compassion is that he, when he heard of the difficulty of the kings who were imprisoned by Magadendra, Jarasandha, he couldn't bear the thought of the suffering that they were undergoing, because Jarasandha was such a vicious person and powerful person that when he defeated the kings, he didn't kill them. He imprisoned them and humiliated them in prison by starving them and treating them in a horrible fashion. Even Kamsa gave special privileges to Vasudeva and Devaki, not Jarasandha. So when Krishna heard of their condition, he felt such compassion that he made arrangements, all arrangements, to come and release them from that horrible situation that they were in. So this is one feature of compassion. When we see, as Prabhupada has explained so many times, when a gentleman sees a blind man heading for a ditch, can a gentleman just watch that happening? Oh, you have to do something. And as Sridhar Maharaj was explaining, as devotees in this Krishna consciousness movement, we've been given so much knowledge to understand very clearly the difficult, the precarious situation of living entities in this material world. Those that have that eye of knowledge and see those that don't have the eye of knowledge heading for a ditch or about to fall off a cliff and to jagged rocks. You have to do something. Compassion is a natural quality. Because it exists in Krishna, it's natural for us. We must, it's imperative, it's compelling to engage in the very natural activities of Krishna consciousness through the Sankirtan mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Prahlad Maharaj was one of my heroes in Krishna consciousness from being a very young devotee. When I heard of Prabhupada speaking about Prahlad Maharaj, the teachings of Prahlad Maharaj, so attracted. In part because of his simplicity and innocence, but also because of his indomitable desire at all personal risk to somehow give Krishna, understanding of Krishna to others, risking his life without consideration to somehow give Krishna to others. And after Hiranyakashipu was killed by Lord Nrisimhadev, and Prahlad was pushed forward to pacify Lord Nrisimhadev because no one else could do that, he understood, very wonderful verse, where Prahlad is saying, I understand that you want to give me some benediction, but please don't ask me to take a benediction because I'm born in an Asura family. I have Asura blood running in my veins. You know what that means. If you ask for some benediction, I'll think of something horrible and use it in a bad way because I have this Asura parentage. Better not to ask me. And if you want to give me liberation, freedom from this material existence, I don't require that. I just can chant your holy name and think of you, and automatically you're there. But if you want me to return to the spiritual world, I don't want to go without taking all these, Prabhupada translates it, fools and rascals, mudhas, with me. Prahlad was not unable to see the condition of persons who were acting contrary to their natural disposition of life. He could see that. But he didn't want to leave without them. He wanted to relieve them of that burden of their suffering. That is genuine compassion. And as Krishna has that quality and great devotees of Krishna have that quality, it's incumbent for each one of us, not just the brahmacharis in the temple, every person here, to develop that quality of compassion and find some means, somehow or another, to give that compassionate gesture into the lives of others in this world. And because we're going to try to keep to our half an hour limit, there are many things I want to say, but I'll just add one other dimension of Krishna's compassion that we can learn a lot from. And that another feature of Krishna's compassion is he likes very, very much to see his devotee placed in a position where his devotee is recognized even above himself. Actually, Krishna did that with Bhishma also, because Yudhishthira Maharaj, after the Kurukshetra battle, he was lamenting, like anything, that he was the cause of so many persons to lose their life. Actually, he wasn't the cause of so many persons. It was Krishna's desire, and Yudhishthira Maharaj was fulfilling, and the Pandavas were fulfilling the desire of Krishna. It wasn't for his personal interest, but it was the order and desire of Krishna, and therefore the Kurukshetra battle was fought. But what Yudhishthira was thinking, such a wretched person, so many persons have died, so many wives are without protectors, and I'm to blame for all of this. Nothing could pacify Bhishma. Even Krishna could not pacify Bhishma. Excuse me. Yudhishthira. Even Krishna could not pacify Yudhishthira. Thank you. But Bhishma was able to. So Krishna he likes very much placing his devotee in a superior position. There's many such examples. When Krishna was approached to attend the Rajasuya Yajna of Maharaj Yudhishthira, messenger was sent to Dwaraka to invite Krishna to come. And Krishna was ready to accept his invitation, but just at the same time, another messenger came, indicating this problem of the kings being imprisoned, and something needed to be done to relieve them. So, what did Krishna do? He turned to his advisor, his dear friend, Uddhava. Please advise me, what should I do? Your advice is always filled with wisdom. And whatever you say, That's what I will do. Krishna, Uddhava gave wonderful advice to Krishna. But Krishna likes that situation, placing his devotee above himself. When Kaliyavana was attacking the city of Mathura, preceding the 18th time for Jarasandha to come also and try to destroy Krishna's army and prove his own superiority above Krishna. When Kaliyavana's soldiers were attacking, the Bhagavatam describes he had a huge army, 30 million soldiers. So Krishna took an assessment of the situation that Kaliyavana, fierce like Lord Shiva at the time of the destruction of the universe, his temperament was likened. In a huge army. So immediately Krishna made an arrangement that the whole Yadu dynasty, so that they could be protected, would be transported to Dwaraka. He made the arrangement for Dwaraka to be built very, very quickly, transported the whole Yadu dynasty, situated them there and came back. And came out on the battlefield with Balaram to face Kaliyavana without weapons. So Kaliyavana was very happy. Here is a fight with Krishna, personally. So he dropped his weapons and started charging toward Krishna. And what did Krishna do? He ran from the battlefield. Because he, same reason, he wanted to give special praise and recognition to one of his very dear devotees, Muchukunda. Now, if this situation had not happened, who would even have heard of Muchukunda? Another name passing through the annals of history, and we never would have heard of Muchukunda. But Krishna ran just fast enough that Kaliyavana couldn't catch him. And he ran into the cave where Muchukunda was resting for a long, long time by a special benediction of the demigods who he had been fighting on behalf of. The benediction he had earned was he could have a long, uninterrupted rest. Anyone that interrupted, just by seeing them, instantly they would burn to ashes. So that's what happened. Kaliyavana kicked Muchukunda, thinking it was Krishna who was fatigued, pooped out, after running from Kaliyavana. And Muchukunda glanced at him and instantly, no more Kaliyavana. Ashes. Krishna wanted to glorify his devotee. Krishna wanted his devotee to have some service to do. And he wanted, through the rendering of that service, for his devotee to be remembered and appreciated and praised. I remember in one morning walk conversation, maybe Yadubar was there in Mayapur, where somebody had asked Prabhupada about Bhaktivinod Thakur. Prabhupada was appreciating Bhaktivinod Thakur for so many of the wonderful works that he had contributed to the Vaishnav society. So someone said, Prabhupada, Bhaktivinod Thakur was so powerful. Why did he not do what you did to bring Krishna consciousness all over the world? He was so powerful. He had that vision. He established so many innovative ways of spreading Krishna consciousness. Why did he not personally do that? And Prabhupada's answer was, he left something for us to do. And Srila Prabhupada created a very, very wonderful international society for Krishna consciousness and gave us a structure to work with and gave us something to do, to maintain and to further expand the compassionate work of our International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And compassionate work begins on a one-to-one level with all the persons. Such a wonderful example the Chaupati Temple sets for, I say this every time I visit here, but I just appreciate it so much, how the mood of caring for the persons who come to visit Sri Sri Radha Gopinath and to associate with the devotees. This compassionate care of every devotee that comes here is such an important part of our Krishna consciousness movement. And extending that gesture to all others, doing, springing from the natural purification that comes from the process of devotional service itself, this attracts Krishna's attention. And when Krishna's attention becomes attracted, he very happily bestows upon that devotee all wonderful qualities and a loving attraction for the object of our service, Krishna himself. So, in this way, we can think of each of the qualities of a devotee and try to come before Krishna when we render our services in the temple and in our homes and in the community and all over the city and all over the world. I meet many devotees from the Chaupati congregation who are now situated because of work or some other circumstance, school, in America, and furthering the cause of Krishna consciousness in very, very wonderful ways. It was such a nice example to set. And what attracts people to take, what is, attracts us to take part in Krishna consciousness is the same thing that will attract others to take part in Krishna consciousness. The natural, wonderful qualities of the devotees. So, there's some other parts because of the time limitation I wanted to speak about, I won't be able to. Such an important duty that we all have. Serving Krishna very faithfully and sincerely and coming before Krishna and all of his part and parcel living entities bearing natural Vaishnava qualities to attract everyone to take part in the Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and come together with all of us and chant the holy name and dance in ecstasy. Hare Krishna.
The side of preaching Krishna consciousness, more of an observer through the eye of the camera, I guess. But I just wanted to relate one incident that in my coming to Krishna consciousness, that actually I was given an assignment to do an article for Asia Magazine. And then after that was published on Krishna consciousness, after that was published, I was given another assignment by Earth Magazine. So I was in the Rochester, New York area, and the closest temple was Buffalo. So I went there, I believe, in summer of 1970 and met the devotees. And I went on one engagement. And as I remember, I think it was a Catholic school. And the devotee who was giving the lecture was none other than His Holiness Prahladananda Swami. And I'll never forget the image that he created in my mind. He was totally blissful, reciting, it seemed like verbatim, the Krishna book to the students. And everybody was just, you know, just staring at him, just enchanted by his absorption. And of course, I was very new to Krishna consciousness. It was quite amazing to me to see this monk with a bald, shiny head and blissful, very large smile and very large white teeth. completely absorbed in Krishna book and to kind of oblivious to everything else, it seemed. I'm sure you were very much aware of the whole situation. But it impressed me very much, and I've always carried that in my mind. Somebody is so convinced and so happy to recite the Krishna book. And we have many such gurus in our development of Krishna consciousness. I actually lived in Bombay with my wife Vishakha for a year and a half trying to develop a Juhu property. And I remember at the time we would walk around with the plans of the Juhu temple in our hands, having no idea how it would ever come to pass. Because we were living in very, very subhuman standards, actually. In a hut with a canvas roof that leaked during the monsoons, with a floor that when you would sweep it, you couldn't actually sweep it because it would come, the concrete would come up as you swept it. Very large rodents, you know, running around. So we were, but we were actually very happy. I could say that was probably one of the most blissful times in my Krishna consciousness to date, serving Srila Prabhupada in those conditions. Because as one devotee said, we would do anything for him. In those early days in India. And he reciprocated very, very wonderfully. I remember in the building, the first temple in Bombay was in the Akash Ganga building on Warden Road. And Srila Prabhupada, he was one of the devotees, and he was always accessible. He would chant japa with us. We'd go on morning walks. It was just, you know, a very small apartment. So Prabhupada was very, very wonderful at the time, very easily accessible and very personal and caring, as he always was. Of course, as the movement grew, it became more and more difficult to see Srila Prabhupada on a personal basis. But Srila Prabhupada was very eager to have this movement develop in Bombay. I was actually the secretary during that year and a half. And Srila Prabhupada asked me to write him once a week as to the development of the preaching in Bombay. And I did that for some time, and he would also return every letter. So he was very, very concerned about as he called it, his office in Bombay. And of course, the Juhu property was developed very quickly. When was construction begun on the temple there?